Bienvenidos a Radio Menea, y'all. My name is Vero Ayati Flores.
And I'm Miriam Soyla Perez, and we are two Latinx friends with wildly different music tastes.
Each week we bring you music from the Latinx artists that we love, and this week we have a little something for the year 1984 that Perez prepared for us.
Sort of self-serving because I was born in 1984, which is obviously like the most important thing that happened that year.
clearly.
And also I'm turning 40, so I was like, well, this is interesting to think back to like what was happening 40 years ago in Latin music. So we're starting with a classic that we've definitely brought to the show before. Let's take another listen to Juan Gabriel's Querida.
Mira mi soledad, mira mi soledad, que no me sienta nada bien, oh, ven ya. Querida, piensa en mí solo un momento y fe, date cuenta de que el tiempo es cruel y lo he pasado yo sin ti. Oh, ven ya, oh, oh, querida, hazlo por quien más quieras tú. Yo quiero ver de nuevo luz en toda mi casa. Oh, querida, ven a mí que estoy sufriendo. Oh, ven a mí que estoy muriendo en esta soledad, en esta soledad que no me sienta nada bien.
I just love this one.
I know. He's such a gem. This is such a hit. He was 34 years old in 1984, which is interesting to think about, like babyface Juan Gabriel.
Yeah, little Juanga.
I know. He was definitely more of like the heartthrob. He was. This is one of his best known songs, and it was included in the album Recuerdos Volume 2. And it's one of the best-selling albums of all time in Mexico. It was released around this time. So, you know, yeah, he was obviously, like, a huge hit and such an interesting... I don't know enough about his trajectory to know, like, when he became more flamboyant. Like, I don't... Was he always, like, into the capes and stuff? Or did that come later? Like, when did that, you know, when did he evolve his style?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, in the 80s, he, like, dressed like somebody in the 80s, but I think that he was always, like, you know, el que sabe, sabe type of deal, but, like, it wasn't necessarily... I think that, like, once he entered, like, his more, like, dressing, like, mariachi era, like, I feel like the mariachi outfit is, like, even though... the context is not this, like, under any other context, if you were not aware of the cultural context of the mariachi outfit, it's pretty gay.
Right, there's a lot
as
of
an outfit.
Bedazzling.
Yeah, it's a lot of bedazzling, a lot
of
very
tight pants. I don't know if
there's
usually
pants.
Capes, though. Are there
no,
capes?
But I feel like that's, like, one thing, like, it, like, I feel like, to me, like, one thing leads more into another, you know, like, it's, like, not such a far leap from a mariachi outfit to, like, another kind of bedazzled outfit, but, yeah.
That's fair,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Maybe
and,
it's not what you actually know, happened, but to me, that feels like, I can see, like, how you might transition easily.
Yeah, well, and sexuality is complicated, and, like, you know, he refused to be labeled, right? That was sort of part of his thing. It's interesting, which I knew, but I hadn't read more about it, is that he had 6 kids. And he, you know, one of the women he had 4 children with, he called her the best friend of his life. And then he actually has 2 other children, both of them each with someone who worked as his domestic employee. So that I feel a little bit like,
cute.
No, that's not cute. Yeah, that's not cute. So I don't know. I feel like I'd seen something about, like, you know, you can have children with people without having sex. So I could see that potentially like with his best friend, you know, but the situations with his employees feels really questionable to me. So, but yeah, we won't know because he has not, no one has said anything that I know of. But yeah, he was never, you know, no, lo que se ve no se pregunta, you know, that's his big, that's his famous quote, which I think is very like indicative of a certain type of like Latino kind of like approach to queerness, you know, is that you just don't, you don't reject anyone, but you don't talk about it when it's, you know, everybody knows, but nobody talks about it kind of thing.
Yeah. I feel like it's also very much of its time. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And I think things like, are changing a lot. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. But he was an incredible, incredible musician and, you know, died not too long ago since we started the show. And there were those ridiculous, his ridiculous, like, manager, whoever kept saying he wasn't dead, like, just really playing off of some really shitty rumors about whether he was actually dead or not, which was really, a mess for a couple of years. But I think that finally stopped. But yeah, gorgeous voice.
Yeah, for sure.
I can say, I mean, you know, I obviously didn't, I was around, but not exactly like, you know, listening to music. Well, I'm sure I was listening to music in 1984, but not that I can remember because I was a newborn. But it does seem like there's a couple of people who are big crooners that were big in that time. So I think that is part of it. And, you know, you can think about even like music culture in the 80s in the US, there were definitely some big crooners. So I think that's one trend we could talk about in this era.
Yes, the balladeer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, I think of Michael Bolton in the U.S. Michael Bolton. Oh, yeah, but
I feel like I don't know. Like, I probably know, have heard Michael Bolton songs, and I know that name, but I am unable to connect the name to any music that I know.
Somehow he's become kind of a joke more than anything. I don't really understand why that exists. I feel like he's the punchline of a lot of jokes at some point. I mean, also, I just watched Office Space, and he is the punchline of a lot of jokes in Office Space because there's somebody named Michael Bolton in the movie. This was a 90s movie. It didn't age well. But yeah, he's another balladeer for sure. All right. Well, let's talk about this next one that I think we've also brought to the show before. It's pretty iconic.
We have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it speaks to some of the political context of the time, what some people were experiencing. So this is Jaula de Oro by Los Tigres del Norte. Let's take a listen.
Aquí estoy establecido en los Estados Unidos, 10 años pasaron ya, en que crucé de mojado y papeles no he arreglado, sigo siendo un ilegal. Tengo mi esposa y mis hijos, que me los traje muy chicos y se han olvidado ya. Yo nunca me olvido y no puedo regresar. ¿De qué me sirve el dinero si estoy como prisionero dentro de esta gran nación? Cuando me acuerdo hasta lloro que aunque la jaula sea de oro, no deja de ser prisión.
Escúchame, hijo. ¿Te gustaría que regresáramos a vivir a México?
What you talking about, Dad? I don't want to go back to Mexico. No way, Dad.
No, this is such a real one.
I know. It's very real. They, you know, this group is a norteño band. They are known for doing a lot of political corridos, including this one. And I feel like this really does speak to the challenging experience of being a Mexican immigrant to the U.S., of sort of like coming to the U.S. to work, and then the experience of your children kind of growing up here, and the ways in which that creates difference between you and your children, and, you know, this golden cage idea of you're sort of stuck in a place that maybe you don't want to be because of the economic reasons and other things that, and then that, yeah, how that changes your family and what it means to be in diaspora and all that is really addressed in this song.
Yeah, and just like, ooh, it's so intense, and it's complicated by all the ways that it's like difficult to go back home, either because of visa reasons or money, and you know, like the things that, like all the material things that are expected of people, sort of like an American lifestyle that people are sort of chasing when they come, and then not sure if that's what makes them happy, but they're here chasing it anyway. It's just so many layers, and I really think that this is a incredible one that just feels very alive today. Like, not, it just makes you realize how little some things have changed.
Right, right. This dynamic is not over. In some ways, I think it's probably gotten worse. Like, the situation at the border has definitely gotten worse. It's more militarized. It's more dangerous. And then, yeah, the criminalization, I think, of immigrants, too. Is in some ways worse, also with technology and the way people can be tracked. This was before NAFTA, which, you know, we've talked a lot about how that like, was the impetus for a big wave of immigration from Mexico and Central America. But there have been, obviously, immigration to the U.S. from Mexico for, I mean, A, you know, the border crossed people at a certain point. And also, you know, there have been different, like, recruitment efforts. There was, like, the Rosetto program. There were, like, factory owners and stuff who would go to Mexico and tell workers if they came to X place, they would have a job. You know, there's all sorts of things that have constantly created this flow of people. So this is, and this was a huge, huge hit in 1984. So it really spoke to people for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
So some other things that were going on in 84, I just sort of like wanted to root myself in kind of the geopolitical context. So
yeah.
The Sandinistas won their election in Nicaragua, which was a huge deal, and obviously it was not the end of the story there, but that was happened in 84. Reagan was reelected to his second presidential term, winning like by a lot against Walter Mondale, was this the Democratic opponent. Michael Jackson won 8 Grammys this year, so he was definitely like in some of his like peak career things that were happening.
Yeah, this was major peak Michael Jackson time. This is like Michael Jackson goes from like being incredibly famous in the US to like being the global superstar that he would become, where like there's probably not a single person on the earth
I didn't know who he was
after this that didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, like, how terrible.
I know. That's all I can think about,
like,
that.
You can't even, like, go to, like, a rural town in Mongolia and still not have peace, you know? Like, just, I know. Like, nowhere.
I think it's such I think people's desire for fame is such a trap, because I don't actually think many people are happy with that kind of fame. Like, I don't actually think life is very good with major fame, but we idolize it and think, like, oh, my God, they're so lucky. They've achieved so much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about a gilded cage, you know?
Ooh, yes, for real. That sounds terrible to me.
Prince's Purple Rain was also released in 84. So also like a very iconic
classic
moment in Prince's career, for sure. HIV/AIDS was a big issue politically. In 84 is when they finally identified like the virus that causes AIDS. You know, Reagan also received a ton of pushback around his inaction around HIV/AIDS and the epidemic.
Yes, Lord. He never said it. He never said HIV or AIDS.
Ugh, crazy.
During his entire presidency.
Right. And this is definitely when a lot of people were getting, a lot of, especially gay men, were getting sick and dying from HIV and AIDS, from AIDS, I guess. And then this is also the beginning of the crack cocaine, I don't want to say epidemic, because I think that like feeds into some of the alarmism or whatever, like the narrative about crack, but it definitely, it was introduced in around this time in Los Angeles and then spread quickly throughout urban centers because of its affordability and accessibility, and definitely, you know, caused a lot of issues for people's well-being, as do many, you know, substance abuse issues. And then, you know, it also fueled like a Republican rhetoric about crack and the Black community and all sorts of racism and things like that.
Right. And the way that it was criminalized was, you know, to this day, that panic has meant that like crack sentencing is so much higher than cocaine sentencing, even though they're like, you know, pretty much the same drug, but right. cocaine is a drug that rich people use and yep. crack is a drug that poor right. people use.
Yep. 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 For sure.
It just reminds me of this question that was going around social media a few years ago. I was like, what's classy when rich people do it, uh-huh. but trashy when poor people do it?
Cocaine, for
and
sure.
I thought that that was such a funny question because I'm like, actually, literally everything. We oh, decide right. what's classy because we see rich people doing it. We mm-hmm. decide what's trashy because we see poor people doing that. And we put value on people and their actions. And we have decided to value poor people less than we value rich people as a society. And hence, it doesn't matter what they do. Like, it's like, it's not like...
That's true.
It's like the directionality of that is like the opposite of what people think. It's not like doing a thing is going to make them classy. Like, we've all seen the ways that, like, you know, when... Like, let's say, like, black people start doing something, and this is race, but, like, race and class are so interconnected in this country. Like, suddenly it, like, seems, like, not classy anymore, or, like, brands don't want to be associated with, like, black people consuming their product because it makes it trashy. Like, the directionality of it is, like, that we actually value some people less. Mm-hmm. And then anything that we see that group of people doing, we... value less also, and not like the other way around. So that's how we get to crack cocaine being criminalized way mm-hmm. way more than just powder cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that these things are just vehicles to reinforce racial hierarchies.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's
this
a good
is
point.
A wild place that we live in.
I know.
Well, speaking of birthdays.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And people and things turning 40. Well, Praia Mané is not turning 40, but we are turning 8.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
I don't think we're going to make it to 40, y'all.
No, yeah. Sorry, y'all. We already know. It's not going to happen. But we have made it to 8. We have made it to 8, which feels almost as impressive as me turning 40, to be honest.
Oh my God. Yes. It has been such a journey and yeah. it's been so fun. And mm-hmm. we really thank those of you who have been listening since the beginning, those of you who've been listening since recently. And yeah, we wanted to do a little campaign around our birthday as we do every year.
Yeah. So, you know, we ask you, we don't do a lot of like talking about our membership program or asking for support throughout the year, but in March, we kind of step it up and ask you to consider supporting us if you haven't been already, either as a sustaining member, which means you pay monthly, either $5, $10, or $15, depending on your level of means. And in exchange for that, you get ad-free episodes, and you also get an extra segment on every episode just for our members. So today you'll hear me talk about a seventh song. That one's kind of interesting. It's somebody who I feel like only is known for like one big hit of his, but actually had a whole career that people overlook. So if you remember, you would get access to an episode, a version of the episode that had that extra segment to it. And so as a thank you to anybody who decides to join as a member in March, we will give you a free item from our merch store of your choice. So I'll email you after the month is over and ask you what merch item you want, and we will send it to you as a thank you. If monthly donations are not don't work for you for whatever reason, you can also give us a one-time gift. That's super helpful. And we have our Venmo and PayPal information in the show notes. And if you give more than $20, we will also offer you a free merch item as well. So you're kind of getting, it's like a almost even exchange. And we thank you so much for considering supporting us. It makes the difference. We use all of the money to pay the costs of the show and give ourselves like a teeny little gift at the end of the year sometimes, like $100 or $200. So it's really right, just about keeping us from having to pay to keep the show going.
That's right, for keeping all the episodes up and for the editing help that we get from our excellent editor Maite, who, oh my God, if we didn't have Maite, I don't even know where we would be.
Remember how we used to do that?
We used to do it all. This really has helped us make it more sustainable for us. So
yeah,
thank you all of you for the help and for considering it if you're not totally sold yet.
All right, this next song I love. It's a cover. It's a really great cover. I don't think we've brought this to the show before, Veto, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. This is by Lisette, and it's called Eclipse Total del Amor. Let's take a listen.
Mírame. De vez en cuando siento que me estás olvidando y que no regresarás.
Mírame.
De vez en cuando pienso que ya estoy muy cansada de estar sola y de escucharme llorar.
Mírame.
De vez en cuando miro atrás y veo con miedo lo mejor de nuestros años correr.
Mírame.
De vez en cuando quiero escaparme y tu mirada me envuelve y me vuelvo a perder. De vez en cuando siento enloquecer. De vez en cuando sueño con alguna locura y no quiero despertar.
Mírame.
De vez en cuando miento cuando buscas mis ojos y preguntas cómo estás.
Mírame.
De vez en cuando muero de rabia y de celos, pero nunca te lo dejo saber.
Mírame.
De vez en cuando quiero escaparme y tu mirada me envuelve y me vuelvo a perder.
Mira mis ojos.
De vez en cuando siento enloquecer.
Mira mis ojos.
De vez en cuando siento enloquecer. Y esta noche quiero.
Outstanding.
I think it's better in Spanish. I think this version is better, but maybe I'm biased. I'm definitely biased. I'm for sure biased.
So
also has that sort of 80s crooning vibes. This is by, like I said, Lisette. I think anybody who's like badass enough to just go by one name, I'm like, props to you. You're just like, I'm just Lisette. That's it. You know, it's I'm just Lisette. She's Cuban. She's actually born in Peru to Cuban parents, but lived in Havana for the first part of her life. And this is her biggest hit. This is like the thing that most people know of hers. Her parents were also musicians in Cuba, Olga y Tony. They had their own careers. Her first ever recording was actually to Ratoncito Miguel when she was 5. Do you know that song or tale, Ratoncito Miguel, Vero?
I think
it's Cuban. I think it's a Cuban thing. It's a cute like nursery rhyme kind of thing about Ratoncito Miguel. So she apparently recorded a version of it at 5, which is adorable.
I think you've talked about it on the show.
Yeah,
but it's not
I think I have.
That's like, I think it is Cuban, not like
yeah,
or at least I don't know it.
Yeah, yeah. I could totally sing it right now, but I won't. She was a Pedro Pan kid, which means that when the revolution happened, some parents sent their children to the U.S. alone because they were concerned about that the schools were all closed by the government, and they were concerned about their children being sent to cut cane in the campo. And so a lot of parents decided to send their children, and they were called Pedro Pan kids because they were sent without their parents, and the Catholic Church was involved in helping them find homes to stay in the U.S. And she was one of the children who ended up doing that. I can imagine how my mom came alone, but to family who were already here and with her sister, mm-hmm. and she was 13, mm-hmm. and she was like deeply traumatized by that. So I can only imagine what it was like to be actually alone and going to stay with strangers and be, you know, some of these children were very, very young. So it's one of those kind of intense things that some people experienced. But she's been in Miami for a long time now. She's been a successful TV host, and she's also married to Willie Chirino, which I did not realize or remember. And he's a big Cuban-American musician, music star of his own right. More known within the Cuban community, I think, than some, like, not like Gloria Estefan, you know, that everybody knows, but very successful. So the two of them are like a music power couple.
Amazing.
Had you heard of Lisette?
I had not heard of Lisette before, no.
Yeah, she's somebody that I heard, but I haven't followed her career as closely as some other folks, but I think this is outstanding song.
Yeah, I'm into this cover. I like it.
And yeah, I mean, I think this time in the 80s is like before some of the big Latin booms, right? It's before, you know, the Ricky Martin moment in the 90s, like, so there's a market for Latin music, but it's a very different market than the market we have today.
Right. It was after the 1950s
right,
Mambo
Cuban
era
yeah.
stuff, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. there was a big lull between then and the 90s, really.
Yeah. So a lot of these songs, this music was really big in Mexico and in other places, in Spain, and not that it wasn't listened to in the U.S., but we didn't have the market, the same kind of market that we had later on.
All right, what do we have next?
So this is a song by Los Bukis, a Mexican group. The song is called Necesito Una Compañera.
Necesito una compañera que me ame, que en verdad me quiera, que no tenga maldad, que en su alma tenga humanidad, que me sepa querer sin temor a perder. Yo necesito una compañera que me ame, que en verdad me quiera, que me ayude a vivir y que nunca, nunca sepa mentir, que conozca el dolor, que valore el amor.
So Los Bukis is a Mexican regional group that started in the 70s. Marco Antonio Solis, who has a very successful solo career, was the headliner of this group. Interestingly, I hadn't learned this term before, but looking into these folks, I learned the term grupero or grupera, which is a subgenre of Mexican regional music that was really popular in the 90s. Yeah. Are you familiar with that term, Beto?
No, I was not.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, there's the subgenre. I want to look into it more. I was interested. So yeah, they were really big for a couple of decades, and then they disbanded in 96 because of conflict within the group. You know, surprise, surprise. It's always the same story. But right. They have had a reunion tour the last couple of years. And then Marco Antonio Solis is like a huge name, and he's particularly popular in El Salvador for some reason, so he's really popular in this region in the DMV because of the Salvadoran. So like he comes really regularly and has these like huge sold out stadium shows here, which I think is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with Los Bukis?
I am familiar with Los Bukis. They're a really big Mexican regional
mm-hmm.
group. And I think, it was interesting listening to them. I feel like it sounds so much like Juan Gabriel of that time. Like the ballads sound so similar.
I know. You can really hear like what was popular in the 80s through these artists.
Yeah.
They're different
yeah,
artists,
for sure.
Right? Yeah. It does have kind of like a datedness to it or a certain period of time. Yeah. The word buki actually is an indigenous word, a Mexican indigenous word for kid.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I learned that when researching this. Yeah, I feel like I didn't grow up listening to them, but they're like a name. The name of their group is like one that I know, you know, I've heard of. They're popular enough that they're sort of like in my pop culture knowledge of Mexican music. Seems like this might be a good time for them to be doing a reunion given the like rise in popularity of Mexican regional music.
Oh yeah, I think that there's definitely a big market for that. I think that like the other thing about this time is that I feel like, you know, in times of great uncertainty, which I feel like right now there's so much uncertainty, whether it's because of like war or because of like a sudden new nuclear crisis possibly, or climate disaster or whatever, I feel like people hang on to nostalgia a lot. And I feel like so much of like what's been going on in music and culture is so heavy on the nostalgia because it's comforting.
Mm.
And yeah. So sometimes I feel like there's nothing new under the sun. There's just versions of versions of versions of old things. Mm. And I'm just like, can anybody make something new? But I think it's just the time. It's yeah. just the time that it's. First of all, I think that that's always been true to some degree. Like, we love nostalgia. It's very comforting. But I think especially when things feel very uncertain, people mm. really gravitate towards nostalgia. For
yeah, it's interesting
in culture, and so that is good news for a Los Spookies reunion tour.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting also that to think about in the '80s was also the Cold War was another big mm-hmm. thing happening geopolitically, mm-hmm. which is also a time of a lot of uncertainty and a lot of fear around potential nuclear devastation of the planet. So I also think a part of the nostalgic that I see in this moment is like millennials sort of being in charge of culture making. I feel like we are, because they're the age, you know, where we are in kind of age wise and like where that might reflect in like media and culture. There's just a lot of media that is playing to nostalgia, millennial nostalgia, particularly. Obviously, Los Spookies is like more like an older generation, but
right
a lot of what I'm seeing is like, oh, this is like very crafted for us specifically, like referencing the things that we grew up with or the media that we liked because of our sort of role in our age and our role in making media right now.
Yeah I feel like I really felt that way during like the last like few Super Bowls. There was like all these performances by like mm-hmm. Usher, 50 Cent. It's just like, this is what the Super Bowl always has been. It's like nostalgia moments for the washed. And now like we're
the washed. Who are washed. Oh, way to talk about it. I'm like, we're in charge. You're like, we're washed.
Yeah.
Well, and Usher, like all that music was what was popular. Yeah. When we were young, it's like, he's not, yeah. It was all throwbacks. Yeah. And all those other artists, and they all look the same too. Somehow they haven't aged really at all. I don't know. Being rich helps.
Not somehow. We know
well,
how.
Well,
surgical well. And other kinds of intervention.
Did you know that J-Lo has claimed that she's never had any surgeries?
Speaking yes, of washed. That is so annoying to me. That is so annoying to me. It
why
is
would
so
you lie?
Fucking stupid.
Why would you lie?
Because she, well, you know, I made Bettis watch J-Lo's little movie.
Justin thankfully watched it with me so we could talk shit.
I was just like completely astonished by how jaw-droppingly bad it was. I just like, I couldn't be alone with it. So,
true.
But like, I feel like anybody who's making those kinds of decisions like clearly has like a fantasy idea of their life and is like having, I don't know, it doesn't has a loose grip on reality.
I mean, I know, I feel like we could do a whole episode trashing J-Lo, but I don't think we don't really like to do episodes just like about things we dislike.
Things that we hate.
Because that we've tried and it just doesn't, it's not as fun.
Yeah. The vibe is not great.
That album is terrible and that movie is unhinged. And I don't know, maybe she doesn't think Botox counts or whatever, but like she's definitely had, I mean, there's just no way.
She's lying about having Botox though. She's like, have you had Botox? She's like, no, I only
even
put
she says
olive
no to
oil
Botox?
On my face.
Oh, God.
Only
that's
put
just mean.
Olive oil on my face.
It's
like
just mean.
Olive oil? Like, olive
it's
oil?
It's just mean to, like, I don't know. I mean, she's lying,
it's
right?
Mean
she has
to
be lying.
To the naive, because the naive are like, damn, maybe if I can put olive oil, like,
right,
I must
like,
be doing something
why
wrong.
Why are
like,
you
no.
promoting unrealistic standards, you know? Like, you are not, what you have is not achievable by most people.
Yeah. I really do not feel like there's any sort of like moral, I don't feel like there's like a morally superior thing, whether you're doing interventions on your body that are just for the sake of your physical appearance. Like, I don't think
right. there's nothing
one
wrong
way or
with
another.
It. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. However, there is something wrong about lying about it.
Yeah, because then you
I
make people
like
think that they're a failure.
You, yes, exactly. If you make people think that like, you know, like, you know, it's like, maybe you're born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline, you know, like, fuck, no. Like, if somebody asks you, like, do you have Botox? And you have Botox? Be like, yes, this is when I got it. Like, I don't know. It's just, I think that it's so unhinged, like the expectations that women are, and, you know, increasingly men also, but like expected to have around aging. And then like on top of that, to like lie about how people accomplish it is completely wild.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. It's pretty fucked up. But yeah, a lot of nostalgia, a lot of millennial nostalgia, because we're washed, apparently, according to Vettel. We're washed.
I mean, one of my greatest dreams is having an in-unit washer and dryer. Like, I feel like that's washed territory, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I really like, yeah, I get a lot of pleasure out of like very basic domestic tasks, like organizing a closet. So I don't know. I mean, I can't argue with you.
I recommend it, to be honest.
Yeah. And not caring about like going out on the weekends anymore and like being content, just like chilling in my house. Yeah. Yeah. Had like my friend Tanya hosted a big gay yard sale on Sunday, and it was like so fun to just like hang out with my friends and like sell some shit. I was like, this is all I need. I don't need to go to a club. Like, this is my version of fun.
Well, the thing is that a lot of us, when we were young, I was just talking about this recently, and I remember this one time distinctly, like being like 22 years old and being like, I can't be home on a Friday night. But I was literally so tired because I was in graduate school. I was like in graduate school, so tired. I must have been maybe like 23 actually, but I was like so tired, and I was like, well, it's Friday, I'm gonna go out, I'm not gonna stay home. So I like drank like a whole thing, like French press thing of coffee, that I could like stay up enough to go to like a dive bar on like in the East Village or something, you know, like shout out Odessa. It's no longer there.
Odessa. Oh my God. Do they have food too? Do I remember? I think I've
been
there.
It was next to the Odessa Diner, which is Ukrainian diner.
Okay.
But there was a dive bar next door that I loved because it had a really good jukebox. The music was not too loud, so you could talk to each other, and there was always a place to sit down, and the beer was cheap. So
it's like,
who are you worried
we're going to judge you? You know, it's like, who is going to be like, what are you doing tonight? Oh my God, you're on your couch.
I was just like, this is what's fun. You know, like, this is what's fun. I can sleep when I'm dead. I don't know what I thought, but now I'm just like, now when I'm tired, I'm like, absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've arrived, but yeah, I do feel like, wow, I'm 40. Like the things that I talk about with my friends sometimes, I'm like, damn. I mean, I'm not,
it's great.
To be clear, I'll be 40
age
at the end of May, but yes, it is a gift to age. You're right. It is a gift. And I'm glad to be chubby faced because I feel like it keeps me looking young.
Yeah, for real.
It's when people are too thin and they get older, they start to look gaunt and wrinkly. So some people have to put, you know, injections. I just got it naturally.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, speaking of crooners, we've got another one coming up. This one is another that we have talked about on the show before. I think in our Senora Jams episode, I definitely remember this hombre showing up. This is a hit called Lo Dudo by Jose Jose.
Anda y ve, te está esperando, anda y ve, no lo hagas por mí, que al fin y al cabo somos solo amigos. Anda y ve, te veo nerviosa, anda y ve, y que sientas con él lo que en su día tú sentías conmigo. Pero no dudo, conmigo te mecías en el aire, volabas en caballo blanco el mundo, y aquellas cosas no podrán volver. Hasta a veces me has llorado con un beso, llorando de alegría y no de miedo, y dudo que te pase igual.
Wow, this is definitely such a specific vibe.
Mm-hmm. This is one of his big hits from this time. A lot of feelings. A lot of feelings, a lot of range.
Yeah, yeah. It sort of reminds me a little bit of Julio Iglesias, which is like, you know, mm-hmm. again, like this like very specific type of like 80s crooner.
Mm-hmm. He was also very big during this time, but he's Spanish, so we don't usually bring him on the show. But yeah, he was big during this time as well. José was el príncipe de la canción. Muy dramático. Also born in Mexico City to two musicians. Seems like a lot of people in this era came from musical families, which makes sense in terms of like connections and like a reason to sort of like nurture your musical talent. He had many, many hits in the 70s, and this is from one of his most successful albums, and it was a major, major hit. And he passed away in 2019, which I think maybe we talked about on the show.
Yeah, I think maybe we did. I feel like anything before 2020 is sort of a blur. It was like a sort of like a while before and after, but that sounds familiar.
Like, we've done like a Descanse en Paz episode. I think maybe he included him in that. Yeah. I don't think we did it. We did a Juanga episode when he passed, but I don't think we did a Jose episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, another heartthrob, another Senora jam from this time. A lot of senoras now loved him when they were young, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And he had a very long and successful career.
Okay, I think we're getting like the idea of like what was the vibe in 1984.
I think we are. I mean, I tried to, you know, I looked at a large sample of like what music came out, and I tried to fix some diversity. So this
This
next one is actually a musician. She's new to me, and I was excited to stumble across her. And I wonder if you've heard of her, Beto. But she's a Puerto Rican diva, as she was known, that for whatever reason that showed up in her Wikipedia that people called her a diva. I'm going to assume it was a compliment. So this is Llamándote by Carmita Jimenez. Let's take a listen. Familiar with her?
I actually didn't know her.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, me neither. She was a singer, a Puerto Rican singer, Afro-Puerto Rican woman, was pretty involved in the disco movement in the 70s, which I'm sure would be some interesting songs to listen to. And she was also a pretty big TV star. So I don't know if it was just that she was better known in Puerto Rico or if we just never come across her. But I was happy to learn about her.
Yeah, I'm into it. It's got a very, very high drama, which I think that is in order. Even though these songs all sound, you know, different from each other in some ways, or like, you know, like obviously like the Jose sounds different from like the Los Bukis, and you know, like all of, they all, you know, have their particular like lanes of sound. I think high drama was in order in 1984.
And this was actually right at the end of her sort of like more public era. She stopped around 85, stopped making as many public appearances, and then it was only later on that it was made clear why. It was because she was diagnosed with cancer and actually had like a 20-year battle with cancer that she passed away from in 2003. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, it's a bummer that it was such a long and drawn out health journey. Yeah, so
for sure.
But yeah, she was born in Caguas, Puerto Rico. And there's a memorial to her there. There's like one of the rooms at the Centro de Bellas Artes de Caguas is named after her. So I also was like, it's easy to make these episodes like super dude heavy. If you don't try. So I was really like making a point to look through what had come out and bring at least, I guess I brought two mujeres to this episode. So
trying to
bring some parity, even though it's not even close to parity, but that's also the sexism in the industry. It's not only my fault, you know, it's not all me.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thanks for going in the little time machine, y'all. I can't believe it's been 40 years since I was born. but also that the 80s were so long ago. Yeah. Is like, there's a lot of funny memes about that, you know, about like the way that younger kids are relating to like the eras in which we were young. And it's like, yeah, we're washed, as you said. Or maybe we're reaching our prime. Who knows? Who knows?
Can be both. ¿Por qué no los dos? Yeah.
¿Por qué no los dos? Washed and reaching my prime. I'll take that. But yeah, thanks for listening, y'all. As always, all the information about these songs are in our show notes at RadioMinea.com, as well as information about our birthday and links to become a member or send us a gift to support the show.
Follow us on Instagram. Make sure to sign up for our newsletter. If you are signed up for our newsletter, you would have known that last week I recommended you all watch the Unhinged J-Lo movie.
You did. You know. It's true. You did.
Make sure to sign up for that for just some key little tidbits from us. And as always, thank you to Maite for the help with editing.
All right, babies. Hasta la próxima.
Bye.